Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? I am so jazzed to where if there's a one-liner I have said over and over and over again since we released a podcast in February of 2019 is data drop chasm. And that line is something that I'm so excited to talk about. The main message today is around data-driven design is the future, and it's a hot button with AI and all this stuff, and really the future is now. And what we're going to be talking about today is round two of the conversation from February of 2019 and putting a little another spin on this data drop chasm. And that show was with our good friend Bill Allen titled The Future is Computational Design. And we're gonna the words really matter of this stuff, of the title of that podcast of what is computational design, right? So from show 135 to now 300-something, my perspective is version 2.0 of the data drop chasm. What would Bill say about this, recording this October 18th of 2023 for a release going into Autodesk University and a lot of cool stuff they have going? And the analogy on our pre-interview is we can really relate to the evolution of cars, right? And the building practices that we talk about, of he's really moved from working on other cars to building his own, or working on other buildings to building his own tools. And we're going to be talking about web-based applications with different plugins and meeting around how the master facilitator's in the middle with tools like Revit and SketchUp. And we have so many lessons learned from show 135 to build from. So without further ado, let's get to know Bill's story and what he's been up to back since February of 2019. Lock and load, tribe. Bill, welcome back. What's your favorite beverage?
Hey, thanks, Devin. Thanks for inviting me back. Favorite beverage is probably an IPA. I love a good craft beer, so I'd probably go with that.
Awesome. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
Colorado is still my favorite place. I love going into the mountains and just escaping up there. I went to Florida earlier this year with the family. That was really nice to see the ocean. But I probably would say Colorado is still my favorite place.
Awesome. And what do you like to do outside of all of your awesome data-driven design stuff that we passionately call the art of construction? What's your favorite hobby or interest outside of that?
Yeah, so I have, I don't know if you or your listeners have heard of this, but I have this electric skateboard. It's called a summer board. And so you ride it like a snowboard. You ride it, you know, heel edge, toe edge. It has these casters in the center. It's nothing like I've ever seen before. And so I bought one of these a few years ago. And my favorite thing is just going with my boys. We go ride our electric skateboards around the neighborhood. And that's one of my favorite things to do.
Awesome. So, Bill, what is your story that led you to helping architects, engineers, and contractors that we all group under the Art of Construction Master Facilitator program around implementing design technology? And what is new since we discussed the future of computational design almost 5 years ago, that today we're really getting smarter as we elevate and talk about data-driven design?
Yeah, good question and loaded question. I like it. I would say kind of my journey started when I was working at HDR Architecture, Omaha, Nebraska, and I was in what I call my BIM bubble. I kind of thought everyone was using BIM. Everyone was, you know, leveraging it for their projects. Everyone was doing computational design. And then I moved to Colorado, and I became a BIM manager in Denver. And I quickly realized that not everyone actually is using computational design or data-driven design or BIM. And there's different gradations of implementation for different firms and based on their size, et cetera. And so it was kind of around then that I found, gosh, I have this experience when I was working at HDR. I bet I could take this kind of experience to maybe some of the smaller to medium-sized firms that are trying to make that transition. And so I started Evolve Lab in 2015 as this on-demand, as-needed BIM consulting company, where we specialize in data-driven design and BIM implementation.
Awesome. So you lived architecture with others. You found this BIM bubble that you were like, this is what everyone's going to be doing. And this is in 2015. And you and I have had some great meetings over the years. And here we are now in 2023. So, Bill, where are we going in your perspectives sitting here today with this data-driven design concept? And can you really talk about why we're really focusing in on data-driven design with these overarching thing of computational design, BIM? Why are we really niching in and talking about that, and where are we going with it?
Yeah, so I think it's a good question. So I'll start with the problem. The challenge is you know, traditionally we still issue drawings, right? So we do computer-aided design. In around 2010-ish, you know, BIM really started to take off. The problem is people still use BIM primarily as a glorified drafting tool. So the challenge is they're still producing drawings, and then therefore, because we're not putting focus on the I in BIM, the data piece, we just continue doing business as normal. And so there's a huge opportunity missed for a lot of firms to be able to leverage that I in BIM, the data piece of it, and because you could do so much with the data. To put it simply, like the data-driven design, it's just doing stuff with data. That's all it is. And so you can do a lot of stuff with data for buildings. You can do daylighting. You know, you can minimize travel distances for nurses for healthcare design. You can you know, minimize the amount of steel that you need for the maximum amount of structure support. You can minimize the amount of lights you need for the maximum amount of foot candles. And so a lot of times what we try to do is we try to understand, like, what are the inputs, what are the outputs, and if you can leverage that data, you can add more value to your customers, to your clients, if you're an architecture firm. And same on the construction side, you can do a bunch of powerful things like quantity takeoffs and being able to do construction sequencing. And so the data piece of it is crazy critical and important, and that's why, you know, we're passionate about it. It's just, it's huge opportunity for architects and contractors.
All right, so in the intro, what really resonated to me when I was like, so Bill, help me understand, what's the version 2.0? And you talked about how, well, in the past, it's kind of like cars or buildings. We worked on others, but we've really evolutionized to where you have new partners and a team that's all come together where you've really built your own tools, right? And so the kind of catch-all is we have an app for that now, right? So can you explain that platform that you've built out?
Yeah, for sure. So again, a lot of it stems from, you might notice a theme here. What I'll typically do, just the way my brain is wired, is I'll see a problem, and most people will see that problem and they'll go, well, that sucks. And then, you know, I'll find, you know, just continue doing it, you know, continuing with the problem. What I'll do is sometimes I'll see a problem and I'll go, gosh, I bet we could create a solution for this. So as an example, the whole computational design piece of it, a lot of the solutions that derive around computational design is visual programming, and that is very counterintuitive to most architects, contractors. And so I use this analogy. You know, Devin, you might appreciate this. You know, like when you wanted to listen to music, say 15 years ago, you and I, we would go to a record store, right? We'd go search through the CDs, look for a band title. You purchase the CD, you bring it home, drive it home, put it in your CD player, and you press play. Now with like smart devices, we say, hey, Alexa, play AC/DC, right? And immediately we have music. Or, hey, Alexa, what's the weather going to be today in Denver, Colorado? And Alexa tells you, right? And so the point being is that those devices have minimized the friction. So kind of in the same way, what we're doing at Evolve Lab is we're trying to minimize the friction for architects and contractors with turnkey products. So that way you don't have to deal with Dynamo, you don't have to deal with Grasshopper. You're actually just being able to do generative design, data-driven design, et cetera, with apps and being able to have a nice user interface, something that's turnkey. You don't have to build your own algorithms, et cetera, et cetera. And so we made this shift a few years ago, the analogy that you were talking about of working on other people's cars. We still do this. So I said, like, we're the mechanic that works on other people's cars. In the last few years, we started working on our own cars and building our own apps and our own products. And so that's kind of the transition since the last time you and I had chatted.
Yeah, and I think back, one of the things that really resonated to me on our last podcast together was we talked about orchestrating a network. And orchestrating a network of like the music, and you and I really resonated in talking through the music as far as, are you the conductor or are you the head violinist, or where is the, you know, the riches and the niches of all coming together, of those different notes coming to play this all coming together. And that really resonated to me. And I was in a meeting yesterday as I was thinking about this recording, and it was around a superstar, Carrie Siggins, and she was talking about how she's launching her own book called The Ownership Mindset, and tonight is the release of her book that I'll be at. And she was talking about, she owns a company around Internet of Things and AI and all this stuff, and she's like, well, I was showing the network and all this stuff, and she's like, well, we have to all really be really smart and look down the line of like, okay, what is this tool going to solve, but then how is it going to change? And she talked a lot about how, you know, AI can take and orchestrate a music piece way better in a lot of ways, but it's also going to be this orchestrated and so then people may look back, and we're really leaning into this master facilitator, because I believe when it comes to custom solutions and custom homes, just like going to music venues and live music, people are really going to lean into the authenticity of the organic, the natural part of this thing. And that's the same thing of finding the right tools to where we can have as much fun as possible. And there's certain areas that are just going to really change, like in housing. Production housing is all about how you can do it, a repeatable process, as fast as you can. So I think these tools you're building, you really have to figure out what segments, where the tools live. What's your take to that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, for our tools, we try to hit different crossroads in a project's life cycle. So we have some tools that, you know, are very on the conceptual design side of it. Our Morphous app does generative design and co-authoring. We have interoperability. We have some AI tools. The one thing I would comment, just as it relates to AI, in my opinion, at least, in the short term, I don't think it's taking anyone's jobs. I think it's just that it's a tool. So it's a tool, no different than SketchUp is a tool, than Revit's a tool, than Grasshopper is a tool. It's a tool that you can leverage. Even if you're using it to conduct music, you're still using it as an end user. You know what I mean? So no different than an app that you might be doing, creating a drum sequence and then adding melody over top of that. You're still leveraging it as a tool to execute the tasks that you want it to do.
So Bill, how do you believe AI will change how architecture is done? And where is it now? And where does AI really fit in now? And where do you think it's going to really change down the line?
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, this one took me by surprise quite a bit. So there's this, I think there's this quote from Sam Altman. He's the CEO of OpenAI and founder of ChatGPT and DALL-E and all of these other ones. And he says this thing. He says, soon AI tools will do what only very talented humans can do today. I expect this to go mostly in the counterintuitive order. Creative fields first, cognitive labor next, and physical labor last. And I found this really fascinating because, at least speaking for myself, you know, certainly self-driving cars and HR software and like those kinds of things. But who would have thought, like, hey, you could put in, I was just talking to my brother last night. My brother's starting a plumbing company. And he was saying, hey, I need a logo designed. And I told him, I was like, hey, dude, you could go to Midjourney and tell Midjourney that you want, you know, a plumbing logo with two cross wrenches, you know, crossing each other, your name at the bottom, and you could have something in the background. And this was something that you can do now. It's text to image. And it's really affecting the creative piece of it. And I think the same is true for architects. A lot of architects are using tools like Midjourney, like Verisk, like others that are going to be helping, you know, streamline the process. But it's completely disrupting the way that we do things, because now we can use it. The main thing that some of these tools are disrupting, like, is Pinterest. Like, if an architect wanted to work and they wanted to start thinking about like a mood board or what kind of materials they want, they would go to Pinterest and they would do a search and they create this board. Now you literally can go to one of these AI tools and you can say, hey, I want a twisting parametric tower in the middle of Denver. And it literally will, you know, render one for you, which is insane. And so it's this generative that where it's really taken off is this generative AI, this idea that it generates things. And the craziest part is that it's directly impacting and disrupting the design industry, which I think most of us, myself included, did not expect.
Yeah, I guess I got to raise my hand a little bit of I heard you say Mid Journey and I hadn't even heard of that one yet. I think a lot of people are like me that are not living this and building amazing platforms like you guys are doing, like ChatGPT, and like, okay, we look at it and you type something in and you start learning, and then so what's the difference of like ChatGPT to Mid Journey? And then I want you to talk through I was the kindling for today's podcast was as I follow all your social media stuff on LinkedIn, and you do a great job of visual representation with word tracks that kind of tie into, the Autodesk world, but yet what Evolve Lab is doing. And you had this social media post about the Hobbit House, and I was like, what the heck is Bill doing with the Hobbit House, right? And then I start clicking on your stuff, and you're just like, wow, like looking at it of these generative designs. So I really challenge people, and we'll put links in the show notes about going to that. So can you talk about to help bring people like me up to speed of like ChatGPT, Midjourney, and then your tools? Like, what's the difference, and why do you need all these different ones?
Yeah, for sure. So different AI tools have different applications, right? So ChatGPT, at least in its current state, is kind of a text-to-text kind of format. You ask ChatGPT, hey, I need you to write me a privacy policy for my contract, and it'll write one up for you. Or you can ask it, write me a story in King James English. It'll do that. And so it's primarily text to text. They're introducing imaging in it as well. I think that's coming. Midjourney is text to image. So you tell it, hey, I want a cabin in the woods with a lot of open windows and glazing, and Midjourney will create that for you. Now, the problem with Midjourney and where some of our apps come into play is that Midjourney is not your actual project. Like, you'll get four different cabins in the woods, but or a more accurate example might be like, hey, I need a 14 7-story tower in Denver, Colorado. It's a multifamily project with balconies, and it'll generate some images for you, but it's not your actual project. So architects and contractors, we go through this whole process of doing our setbacks, doing programmatic studies, interviews, setting up our height restrictions, and we need that context, which Midjourney doesn't really get you. What Verus does is Verus uses your project, which is our app. Verus uses your model as a substrate. So what that means is that you could have a very simple conceptual model or a detailed one, and what it'll do is it'll layer on ideation and rendering on top of that. And so, as an example, like, you could just have, a few boxes on top of each other in SketchUp, and then you could say, "Hey, I want this to represent a container house with a perforated panel and windows," and it will generate that on top of it. Or in your example, you talked about like the one I did with the Hobbit House. I just took the Autodesk sample model. Everybody knows that one. And so what I did is I took that, and then I put on a bunch of descriptions that would describe a Hobbit house, such as like mossy roof, stone walls, undulating windows, etc. And what it did is it layered on all of those attributes, those parameters, those descriptions on top of my model. And why that's so important is because it's your actual project, right? So you've actually done the work, you have all these setbacks, you have all of this information. You don't lose that with Verus. You can actually use your model as a substrate and then build on top of it.
I love your how you articulate this stuff of like zooming out to text to text to text to image. Now let's niche in. Talk about your tool around AI.
Yeah, so that's the Verus one. And so again, what this is doing is it's using your model as that substrate for your output. So whether it's Revit, Rhino, SketchUp, it consumes those 3D models, those building information models, and then it layers on top of whatever ideation or rendering you want on top of it. We have some different sliders in there. So like we have this geometry override. If that's really low and you do a rendering, you just want to change some of the materials, it can do that. Or if you turn up the geometry override really high, in the example of the Hobbit house, you know, it really took a lot of creative freedom to change a lot of what I had in that image. And we have some other settings too, the ability to render select. So then if you want to, like, say you do an interior rendering and you're like, gosh, I like this, but I don't really like the couch is black. I want a white leather couch. You can render select just parts of your image and the AI engine will re-render just that selected part, almost like Photoshop. In the Photoshop generative fill where you just select pieces of it that you want to change, it does something kind of similar to that.
So if I'm understanding this right, it's kind of like it starts with text to dot, 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 and then you got to figure out where you're going to go, and bringing this into construction is, you know, like companies like TestFit of like how many parking spaces do we need, or Proformas to match up like the business of architecture. But then what we're really talking about here today is the creative side of architecture to marry that stuff together, where ChatGPT is more like contract language. Midjourney is more like to get an image. But where you guys have really niched in with Verus AI is it's a plug-in to the tools that the experts use day in, day out. And I raise my hand as I don't use SketchUp, Revit, or these different like Autodesk family tools, if you will, Rhino, Grasshopper. We've done several podcasts around those to really help understand. We have to really niche in to then understand what do you do if you don't actually have those tools, but you want to kind of play around yourself and figure out how you can move your project forward. Do all of your tools that you built, do you have to have do they all plug into Autodesk or SketchUp? Or is there a way, like me, a guy that doesn't actually have Autodesk or SketchUp, is there anything we could use under the Evolve Lab tools?
Yeah, so then the other thing for Verus that we have is a web-based version. And so with that, you can actually go, if you don't have Rhino, Revit, SketchUp, you actually could just go to the web. With that, you can actually, if you have a project, all you have to do is just upload an image. And with that image, it'll actually do the rendering for you from that image. So that's something you could use.
If you're kind of an outsider or want to just learn more to help, you don't need to have those. But then the whole of evolution of this stuff is that you do have to make sure your team, you have to have the right experts doing different parts and plugging in to make it all work. Like you talked about the Hobbit house, is you built from an existing design and kind of built that in a way that really made it unique with the Hobbit house from what it was there before.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, it's using your project as that substrate. And even the web-based version, if you don't have a model, ours is that web-based one is image to image. And some really cool use cases, especially for your construction people that listen to the podcast, and people like yourself, Devin, that are not using these tools, a really nice use case is, and I just did this, my wife and I, we were looking at buying a house, and it had this super outdated kitchen. And, you know, what you could do is you literally, I took a picture from the house, the kitchen picture, and I uploaded it to Verus on the web. Okay, so no model, no Revit, no Rhino, no SketchUp, just a picture of this kitchen. And I asked Verus, I said, hey, render me this kitchen, but do it with white cabinets. You know, I want a beige tile floor. I want a lot of glass. And it rendered, you know, an example for that. And then the render selection, I was able, even in that format, like I could select part where I wanted to install a dishwasher. And so I could render select just that part, and then it rendered me a dishwasher. So that's another opportunity to use it if you don't have, you know, Revit, Rhino, SketchUp.
Mind blown. So like you only have a picture, but you want to evolve this picture and change colors, put a refrigerator or something in there. So you just kind of box out that area and say, put this item in there, and you can evolve that just with your tool. when you think about that, because like where my mind is going is like there's so many like clunky tools out there of like where we've got to kind of getting here today. You have to do all this cut and paste stuff to be able to kind of showcase a rendering that has a lot of funky stuff happening behind the scenes. And then when you want to evolve that, it's really hard to continue to do that. But what you're saying is now you can really evolve to evolve and really let that stuff go in a fast action way.
Yeah, that's the big difference. So like for myself personally, like if I wanted to design a Hobbit house, you know, it would and render it, like it would probably take me a month, you know, to do what I posted on LinkedIn. Or in the example of the kitchen design, right? I'd have to basically go into Photoshop or I'd have to model up that kitchen and change the materials and then go to the rendering tool and render it and, you know, easily a week, you know, to do something like that, to do a kitchen design. What these tools are doing with generative AI is, since you can use that model or that image as a substrate and then just type in the text prompt, in like 26 seconds, you get a new image. Another 26 seconds, you get another image. So like in 1 minute, you have four design options.
And that's so important to get down the design evolution. And then back to the beginning of this conversation, then you got to bring back in the BIM bubble of the actual parametric object that is the exact thing. Like in my day-to-day world, I sell windows and doors, and they're this complicated thing of different manufacturers and how it actually gets built to take a digital representation. And then when you walk into the house to actually understand how that built-in piece of art, that moving wall system is tied in, that's something I think we really have to lean into of like how do the iterative process moves into the actual, the true digital model that matches up to the physical model. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And that is a problem we're trying to solve. So one of our apps, Helix, is an interoperability app, and it converts SketchUp models, which is just a massing model, to native Revit components, right? So in the example of a window, right, let's say that someone designs a window on the SketchUp side, you need to convert that over to an actual Revit family with all the parameters that comprise that window, and then you need to be able to schedule it, know how many windows there are on the project, etc. With some of the generative AI piece of it, the challenge is that the output is an image, right? But what we need to do is we need to be able to translate that image to an actual building information model. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to use the same technology that we're using for Helix that converts just a mesh massing model to a Revit building information model. We believe that we could do the same thing with an image where we could, you know, capture the three-dimensionality of that image. We have a model viewer that we're working on, and then it'll actually translate it to native, you know, geometry that's important for you for a window to be able to schedule it.
That is the path we have to go, because if you make here is the new digital kit of parts and you're just trying to put the square peg in the round hole, you're doing it the wrong iterative process versus just letting the creatives be creatives. And that's where the master facilitator is really going to rise to the top on this deal, because you have to give them the design freedom and let them go through that iterative process. But then once you hit a point, that's where the ChatGPT and the contracts and the different language comes in of like, this is what's actually going to happen. And that's where the rubber meets the road. And typically the creative part of it doesn't match up too well with the finance part of it in a lot of times. And I think that's where you really have to have all those, the different channels coming together. And it's exciting to hear this because it's actually coming together. And I think about like Revit way back in the day where the BIM model, where you could put pricing and all this stuff, but it was so early, like none of it worked because the families and how it all came together. But using that as with other plugins like you've built, I feel like we're actually getting there.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Those are the problems that we all need to solve. Really, there's different pieces to the project, whether you're an architect or a contractor, they're all working on the same project to your point. And there's these different chasms that exist, and trying to figure out the problems that are around those, coming up with solutions, whether it's interoperability, whether it's quantity takeoffs. Again, it comes back to that data piece of it that's so important.
So Autodesk University is coming up. And if I remember right, last time we did this podcast, kind of right after Autodesk University, and that's where I think you had done a presentation around the data drop chasm that got a lot of traction back in 2019. What are you looking to glean going into, you know, this year's Autodesk University, and what do you think the main topics will be almost 5 years later from when we hit that record button in that moment in time then?
Yeah, I think, you know, not to keep harping on the AI piece of it, but it's the year of AI. There's going to be a ton of AI classes. We'll be presenting AI at our booth using Verus. And so I think the tools are maturing enough now that you can actually use them in production. And I would say, I think at Autodesk University, you're going to see a lot of classes around artificial intelligence.
Bill, I absolutely love your insights, and we'll make sure to have the links to follow of all the stuff from the classes you guys are putting out there at Autodesk University and continuing to evolve labs in so many cool ways. As we work on closing this thing out, the questions we always ask, and I love your perspectives of always what is the biggest pain and how do we fix it, and moving along those lines of in the future, what is your crystal ball for the future when it comes to technology and construction?
I would say, you know, we're going to continue moving forward using data to help drive construction, to drive design. There's going to be different gradations of implementation for that for various firms. AI is going to be a big piece of that, machine learning, being able to learn from past projects for contractors. So like as an example, one thing you could do is you could say, hey, take all of these past projects that I have, all the data that's associated to them, and then do machine learning on that data to understand, okay, how did we do it before? How does that inform future construction projects? I think the machine learning piece of it is going to be kind of this next stepping stone. There's a bunch of, basically, a lot of the machine learning data sets feed the artificial intelligence tools as a I don't know, a product or something that an architect or a contractor can use. In the future, we're going to be doing machine learning on our own data, and firms are already doing this, but I think it's going to become more and more mainstream where you're going to have like your Genslers, your HOKs, your SOMs, and those guys are going to be going, okay, this is cool, but we need to be able to use our data set to help inform design, or contractors, your JE Dunns, your Kiewits, et cetera. They're going to be saying, hey, how can we use machine learning to be able to inform the construction schedule, construction sequencing, being able to leverage that to get more accurate quantity takeoffs. I think that's really where it's going to be going in the very, very near future.
Couldn't agree more. And what is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
I would say don't be scared of the tools and the technology. You're still the end user. I mean, a lot of people, the naysayers and the pessimists, you know, it's taking our jobs, it's going to replace. No. There's this quote that's very popular right now that's on Twitter, is that AI will not put you out of a job. Someone using AI will. So I think that's very important for the listeners to think of and to know, especially in the short to middle term. These are tools that, quite frankly, like if you are not learning these tools, you will unfortunately be left behind. And so no different than when people started using Revit. And I mean, some people are still doing hand drafting. But I have to say, like, I would guess that they're not going to get as many projects as someone that can add more value to their customer that's leveraging BIM or data for their projects. No different for these tools. People that, just like I was saying, like for myself, if I needed to design it, if I wanted to create a design option and I did a project, it would take me a whole week, you know, to do that one design option. Now I can do 4 design options in 1 minute. I'm going to be able to go to that client and present more options in more real time, and be able to add more value than my competition. So that's what I would encourage the listeners to do, is to learn the tools. Don't be scared of them. You're still an end user. It's going to help your skill set. You have to grow, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely love it. Bill, what an honor to have you leading the Master Facilitators. Thanks for coming back and sharing your story.
Thanks, Devin.
I got to do a quick recap. And Tribe, I love when we get to have Bill Allen come in, because there's days I'm like, I'm beating my head against the wall because I do want to create the most value and be cutting edge. But I'm finally feeling like, hey, I'm busting out of this BIM bubble that Bill talked about many moons ago, right? And figure out, like the old quote of, we still work through email and they say, let me send you your drawings. And then you draft around that. And we have to figure out And that's what the Art of Construction Master Facilitators program is all about. And utilizing the AOCIT house is like, how can we take visual programming as a team and truly work together and use these tools that are built out there? Like the story that just blew my mind of he only has a picture that turns into potentially buying this house and showing his wife, this is what this kitchen could look like, and this is how we could add a washing machine. How valuable is that stuff to make informed and create lessons learned and move the project forward? But the big takeaway for myself and all of us is you need to know your data set. You need to understand the I and BIM for you, and then be able to have reach outward and have others help you with that. And that's what we're right. Partners like Bill leading the Art of Construction through Evolve Lab. So here's what I'm going to do after this podcast, and I challenge you all to do the same. Go to evolvelab.io/Veras, V-E-R-A-S. If you know me behind the scenes, I have my experience center and my turkey toe, my little golf course. We're rehabbing a building next summer, and I'm going to take the pictures, and I'm going to go use that tool instead of emailing a set of plans to a set of plans to then build it twice like we do a lot of times, instead of reiterate over and over to make sure we're on the same page. Make sure you follow Bill Allen's stuff. He's cutting edge, but at the end of the day, tribe, he's solving the problems we need to solve. Crush it out there, tribe.